Critic Clive Barnes once called my guest Murray Lewis our most physical of dancers and most brilliant of choreographers. Lewis's work with choreographer Alwyn Nicolai has been one of the most celebrated collaborations in contemporary dance. Lewis began his career in 1949 as the principal dancer in the Nicolai Company, which pioneered abstract choreography and dance as a form of multimedia theater. But in the mid-50s, while continuing to dance with Nicolai, Lewis launched a simultaneous career as a choreographer with his own dance company. The Lewis and Murray dance companies have always been closely associated. Now they have officially merged. The new company makes its New York debut at the Joyce Theater October 17th. Murray Lewis told me the reasons for the merger.
I think it was mostly economics. Economics and the state of the art, in the real sense of the state of the arts, plural. When we did our season last year's, we did our seasons back-to-back and paid double everything, double load-ins, double this, and double that. And we just sat down and decided economically there was no reason not to merge the two with a common and a fantastic repertory. He has at least more than 100 works in his repertory, and I have close to that in mine. Dancers that come out of the same philosophy and training out of our own school. It was just a very viable and feasible and, I must say, a very natural way to go.
You and Alwyn Nicolai go back to 1949 when you started to study with him. What was different about what he was doing, what you learned from him, from what you'd been exposed to before?
I'd been exposed to nothing. I began with him. So that's the really wonderful way about learning and training. You don't have to unlearn too much. I was lucky enough. I knew nothing. And I just sailed right into it and absorbed what he had to offer.
What did you have to unlearn, though, about the way you carried yourself when you were walking or when you were sitting?
Well, I was really very young, and I had a terribly proportioned body. I mean, I'm sure I was bow-legged, or I can't remember what I was. And I had no chest, and my hip placement was terrible, and I had no strength here and there. What I had was an absolutely burning desire to move. And that carried me through all of my, shall I say, afflictions. And I learned everything. I learned how to think dance in a daily living, how to bearing of the dancer's body. I had to discover myself in terms of how the psyche related to the physical and how I had to, that I could not practice solely the dance, not environment, but the dance nature only in the dancing class. I had to carry it outside into daily living. I learned to walk and observe and carry myself and think and try to participate totally, constantly during the day, the way I was asked to participate in the classroom. And that was a very important thing, carrying that art ethics and that art principle into a daily ethic and a daily principle.
Mm-hmm. Because Nicolai's dances were so abstract, some of his early work was criticized for being dehumanizing because it was about abstraction, it was about form and shape, not about a storyline. As a dancer in that company, did you ever feel that way yourself?
You know, that always puzzled me because I was his lead dancer from the beginning, and I was a very passionate dancer. I imbued everything with great gusto and depth and emotion, and I mean, this is what carried the company and myself to such a long-lasting career, was that I imbued everything with great human passion. I could not understand critics that way, excepting to explain that they had never seen this before.
Nicolai once said that choreographing for someone else is like handing them a handful of sand. You lose so much, but you learn to settle for it. Do you feel that way when you're choreographing for somebody else?
Oh, God, do I. And, you know, I constantly think of that line. Now that Nick and I are working, we are working together. This is a unique thing. We're doing a collaboration, actually choreographing simultaneously the same work right now. And it's hell. It's absolutely hell. I realize how differently we choreograph, how different our patients are, where he gets his material, where I get mine, his vision, my vision. I see all these differences. But every time we look at the run-through of the work, I think of that line. You know, it's like handing somebody two handfuls of sand into one little palm, and what stays, stays. I think of that line all the time. Very true, very true. It's terribly frustrating. I must say, for a choreographer like Nick, who doesn't really, who has to verbalize his choreography to his dancers from across the room, Oh, the frustration must drive him up the wall. I simply get up and show them, you see, and I do it, and there's no problem. But for him to give them a handful of verbal sand, oh, that is really Deathsville.
Well, Nikolai's in his mid-70s now. You, I think, are in your early 60s, is that right? Are there certain moves, jumps, for instance, that you can no longer execute that you want to show the person who's going to be dancing?
No, you see, I have been dancing for so many, really 40 years. It's the only profession I ever had. I mean, I started 40 years ago, and I'm still doing it. So I have an extraordinarily well-trained body. And as I say, I trained it properly from the very beginning. I have a body that always wanted to move. I never have to fight myself to move. I mean, it's a perfectly natural thing. The structure, everything works. I am blessed in that respect. And so that today, I can still do anything I did before. I mean, I don't do it on stage because I hate to keep it that to that fine point of training. But in choreography, I could do any of those leaps and any of those things and show it. I am very lucky in that respect. Mm-hmm. I can still do that. But as I say, I don't choreograph those things for myself on stage.
Right. Dancer and choreographer Murray Lewis is my guest, and his dance company just merged with the Alwyn Nikolai Company, and this new company will make its New York debut October 17th. You once said that when you were young, you weren't attracted to modern dance because it was dominated by strong, intense women. What alienated you about that?
You know, you have to understand, when I was young, I knew nothing. So when I say these things, I'm drawing out of my opinions, you know, out of a very shallow relativity to the art in general. No, I think what it was that I was brought up in early modern dance. I turned pages for the Tamiris concerts. I saw Graham and Humphrey and a lot of other companies which don't exist and whose names mean nothing today. One of my sisters belonged to one of those other companies. It was very female-oriented. Now, mind you, I'm talking when I'm 13 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
Very female-oriented. Those ladies all wore, it seemed to me, black skirts and rolled around on the floor all the time. And I, at that time, was absolutely being seduced by Fred Astaire in the cinema. And I could not relate the elegance and grace of his vertical moving to their dark, groveling vocabulary. And so, you know, it just didn't appeal to me at all.
Did you ever dance in musicals before before becoming, doing more abstract dancing?
Oh, yes. That was always my ambition. When I was, oh, gosh, I did road shows of musicals. When I was discharged from the Navy, I
You in the chorus? Or?
Yeah, oh, of course. I'm telling you, I knew nothing. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know what a dance belt was when I took my first audition. That kind dance director, you know, got me through my first near miss with a hernia. But I did do that stuff. And then for a period of time when I was discharged, I worked in a nightclub. I did tap dancing in a nightclub. I knew nothing about tap dancing, never studied tap dancing. But I remembered everything I'd seen Fred Astaire do, and I just repeated all that wonderful, glib, facile attitude that he had impressed upon me. And I just made up steps and improvised a great deal and got away with it. Another thing about that, I earned $65 a week. This was 1946. I earned $65 a week during that nightclub stint. It took me almost 25 years to earn $65 a week as a concert dancer.
Is it important for a dancer to like their body, and have you always liked and felt comfortable with yours?
You know, you have such wonderful questions, because every morning I get up and I have to look at that face when I shave it, you know, and then once in a while I look to see if my legs are still hanging on or if they're still straight. The thing about it is, suddenly I see myself, and I've never seen myself before. Not that I change so much, but I must say something must be, I must be so completely occupied in my thinking and mind that every once in a while I look at myself as if I'd never seen myself before. Who is that? And I look at those legs and I say, are they straight? Look at those legs. They're not bad. And I realize they're mine. But there are dancers who really have a fixation about their bodies. You see, when you ask me these questions, I think of them relative just to myself. But there are dancers who are comfortable with their bodies, others who are not, others who have to really whip and beat and force themselves into stretching and warming up. And that's, gosh, I sympathize with those people like you can't imagine.
You know what I'm wondering? When you're rehearsing or warming up or whatever, you're always doing it in front of a mirror.
No, not I.
As oh, you don't?
Fact, no way. And all the classes I teach and all the classes I've always taken, you never, there are no mirrors in the room.
Why? Oh, I thought that that is never the case.
Only ballet dancers have that kind of surface ego.
Well, is it ego? You know, I'm wondering, like, if you're a dancer and you're always looking in the mirror, whether it you get involved with the narcissism of, like, God, my hair looks terrible, wish that nose was smaller, whether you just see form. I mean, I don't know. And why don't you use mirrors?
It's a combination of both for those dancers who watch themselves. And when I say ballet dancers, I mean, this is a very legitimate training in the ballet studio. You dance in front of a mirror and you look. The intent always is to look and see your line, to see where your hand is placed. But in reality, you're really looking to see how wonderfully you look with your arm in this place, how wonderfully you look when you're in the air, how wonderfully, you know, it's always this kind of attitude. One of the characteristics about ballet dancers is that when they perform on stage, their head is always riveted to downstage because they learn everything looking in a mirror. And their head is never fluent to go with the direction of the movement. Well, in a contemporary training, or the training we do, and any training of a basic nature, your head is to be related to the movement. And if the arm is down, your focus is down. If the arm is this way, you're grained to that position this way. And when you're looking at a mirror, your head is always at that unnatural bent to keep looking at yourself. And this is a very bad training process. That's why there are no mirrors in the room.
That's a really interesting point.
Also, when you dance, you have to know objectively on the screen in your mind what you look like. You have to be able to see what you look like because you have to know what the audience is looking at. Now, in ballet, that's replaced by the mirror. But where your body has to be related in so many different ways, you have to have that picture in your mind and mm-hmm. make your own criticisms. And you have to feel in your body where something is not applied to the direction of the movement, and you have to sense that and make your own correction.
Mm-hmm. You know, I should mention here that you have written a lot about dance as well as performing and choreographing, and you once wrote that you were writing about a time when on stage you were executing a difficult jump, and you accomplished it, and it really brought the house down, and you suddenly started thinking that you had to mentally prepare yourself for the day it didn't bring the house down, or you missed, and you didn't land well. Did that ever happen?
Well, you know, I'm starting to reach those days where it might happen. I tell you, being a choreographer has, in a way, perpetuated my career. I choreograph for myself those things I can still do brilliantly and confidently and with artistry. I don't relate myself anymore to the air work, to the, oh, how should I say, the cornier kind of comedic things I used to do, to the to anything that I could not execute with great confidence and execute well. So I choreograph myself in different genres, in different movement vocabularies, and do different things. If I did not choreograph for myself, I'm sure I would have stopped my career some time ago. Mm-hmm. Because now I choreograph for what I still can do. Mm-hmm. I have a great range of movement. I don't get on stage, you know, in a wheelchair and hobble around. I still execute it with, you know, and I still challenge myself. And as I said, I can still do any movement I could ever do. And when I demonstrate movement for my company, I still do it. But I take it easier on myself. In the back of my head, you understand, I'm 62 now. And in the back of my head, there's this little voice that says, will you cut that out? A guy your age shouldn't be doing stuff like this, you know. And and I think about that. I think, yeah, I should not push certain things too much because I want to leave the field of battle honorably. I don't want to be carried out in a stretcher. And I do think about that. But it's a little voice in the back of my head that has cautioned me, and I always listen to that little voice. I have another lucky facet, and then I do have a very knowledgeable confidant who also lives in this body. And the two of us discuss everything. My inner person and my outer person get along very well, and I'm lucky that way.
If you stopped dancing, though, you wouldn't need to retire from dance. You have your own company. You choreograph.
Oh, I have so many things to do. I would love to retire dancing so that I can do and put my energy into all these other things. But the physicality of dancing has always seduced me beyond any of my other capacities, and I still respond to that. I just, again, as I mm-hmm. had to dance when I was a youngster, I still have to.
Mm-hmm.
And people, this is what's called a natural, someone who just has to do it. It's a compulsion.
I am the kind of viewer, when I go to see a dance and everybody's dancing around in tights, you know, I always wonder if people respond at all to the other dancers' sexuality, since the apparel is so revealing. Very few dancers in public seem to acknowledge this kind of thing, but you once wrote that when you first started dancing in companies where people wore tights, you realized you could either think dirty or come to grips with abstraction, and it was a difficult choice.
Still is.
Is it really?
Oh, anybody who would deny that's out of their head. I think that kind of modesty is preposterous. I mean, we can even talk about it today with such openness. Then perhaps, I mean, if you were interviewing them 50 years ago, you had to be careful about what you said and acknowledged. But today, I mean, good grief, of course. I mean, there's the pure sensual physical delight and empathetic response to a moving body that's just, you know, just beautiful. And I mean, if you like breasts or butts or legs or arms, I mean, there you've got marvelous array in front of you, and you take your choice and you favor one person over another and you watch that person, identify completely with that person. Oh, sure.
Well, do you try to suppress it or use it in the dance?
As well as the emotional, as well as the intellectual, as well as the physical, there is also the sensual aspect of all movement, because that is the nature of two human beings. One looks and one views, meaning the audience and dancer. You have to acknowledge that. You simply have to acknowledge that. Many choreographers don't acknowledge it, but think it very strongly and do it. I mean, they will select dancers who have a certain kind of sexual appeal. They select as well as a technical ability and other artistry, but they do look for that. They select dancers who know if they are not themselves sexy, I put that in quote, you know, sexy performers, know how to parcel it out discreetly, know that it is a spice which is essential. It's like a good cook who knows that just a pinch of a spice can go a long way, and how to be careful with it, and yet how essential it is in the makeup of a good recipe. It's that kind of a skill that has to be handled, just mm-hmm. the care, but it must be there. Otherwise, you're going to get a bland dish.
Mm-hmm.
And the sexuality and the sensuality and the how that is fed to the audience has to be very carefully done, but without it, it becomes bland. Or vulgar, or just pouring on you like cold water. If you know people get out there and start shaking and butt twitching, and I mean this then reduces it to what it is, which is simply a sex show, which an art presentation is not.
You have a big opening coming up. How do you psych up dancers right before an opening so that there's an appropriate amount of adrenaline, but not a debilitating amount of nervousness?
Well, most of our company members are real veterans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we tour constantly. We tour the world and the United States and perform all over. I mean, it must be balanced. It must be, it's essential. That adrenaline, as you say, is essential. But they know how to do that. One way, curiously, of controlling that adrenaline is to reach that pleasant state of exhaustion where nothing, where you just don't have the energy to be tense any longer, and you get up and you work with great release of movement. I know that in earlier days, Nick would make us do a complete run-through of the show we were going to do in an hour. I mean, just absolutely, and full out, way out, you know, just really exhausting. And then I do know that when we went on, I used to be just so exhausted, I would dance effortlessly. I just didn't have any tensions left.
That's really interesting.
It's a balance. It's a very fine balance. But a professional dancer doesn't worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
I have never had stage fright. I blacked out on stage. I mean, by that, I mean I've lost my count, or suddenly my mental process didn't feed my physical process, and I thought, what's next? What's next? What's next? What's next? You know, and just froze. But, you know, that happened in the beginning. But never stage fright. I was always eager to get on stage, because once you were on stage, it meant no more rehearsals. God, did I hate rehearsals.